The great physicist and scientific genius Albert Einstein perhaps said it best for all of us when he declared, "I want to know God's thoughts. The rest are just details." The desire to know God's thoughts is an age-old quest, as ancient as the story of Adam and Eve, whose eviction from the Garden of Eden for wanting to know God's thoughts was the launching pad for all human history, culture, learning, and adventure. To be human is to be hardwired for seeking wisdom, knowledge, and truth that unfailingly lie beyond our grasp. Some would define this as the core of the human problem and sinfulness, grasping after what we cannot achieve. Some would define this as the core of human experience, identity, and greatness. Perhaps it is both, both our greatest strength and our greatest weakness. Perhaps it's the starting point for the divide between religious conservatives and religious progressives. One faction seeing humanity's holy discontent as cause for celebration, and the other faction seeing that same holy discontent as cause for alarm. It is that holy discontent that got Israel and gets us in a heaping load of trouble, chasing after other gods. Hosea would say, whoring after other gods. Sexual wantonness, materialism, overconsumption, cheap, degrading, dehumanizing entertainment, greed, selfishness, self-righteousness. Divorcing ourselves from the ways of God who loved us into existence and who loves us still enough to call us back from our wayward wandering. But it's that same holy discontent that caused the disciples of Jesus to latch onto him, looking for and eager for the life and wholeness they could find nowhere else. Lord, teach us to pray, one of them asked one day, which is to say, show us the source of your peace. Show us the source of your power. Show us the source of your life and wisdom. Show us the source of your inner strength and confidence. Show us the source of your godliness and your humanity. The disciples saw in Jesus what they saw nowhere else. They also saw that his uniqueness was directly tied to his connection and relationship with God. They didn't ask to see his diploma. They didn't ask to see a list of his teachers or of the books that he had read and commented upon. As interesting as all that might have been, they knew that those were nothing compared to the time he spent alone with God. And so they asked him, teach us to pray. Jesus responds with the briefest of prayers, just 38 words according to Luke, words that we still use here almost every Sunday and are used around the world. That's one way to answer the disciples' request, but Jesus goes on to answer the disciples' request a second way. If the first answer is about what to pray, then the second answer is about how and when to pray. And there is a clear line that runs between the two answers. Give us each day our daily bread is what Jesus instructs us to say, which is to say that we are to pray only for what we need at the moment, just that and no more. But then in the second half of the answer, Jesus counsels us to be constant and persistent in prayer, to keep on praying no matter what. The image he gives is that of our prayers serving as a battering ram against heaven, that we are to pester God and keep pestering God until God relents and gives us exactly what we want. But I want to suggest this morning a different way of looking at and understanding those words. It's not that God is a reluctant or stingy giver that we have to arm twist into submission. Clearly, Jesus tells us otherwise. So our persistence in prayer is not about beating God down or wearing God out, but rather it's about staying close to God and building up our relationship with God, making time and space for God in the busyness of our life. If we keep score of our prayers by how effective they are, by how much and how often and how quickly we get what we ask for, that's one thing. And by that scorecard, it's often easy to dismiss the value of prayer and the value of religion and the value of God. But it's a whole other matter. If prayer is not a pipeline to tangible rewards, but a lifeline to the one who is creator, redeemer, and sustainer of us all. In the first instance, we turn God into a giant slot machine in the sky with infrequent and unpredictable payouts. If we just pull that lever long enough and hard enough and fast enough. In the second instance, God becomes the one whose goodness, wisdom, patience, strength, and love become more and more familiar and available to us the more time we spend in prayer, connecting with God, seeking not just the mind of God, but the heart of God as well. Prayer isn't about results, about wheedling things out of God. Instead, prayer is about dawdling with God, spending time with God, in order that more and more we might become like God. To pray is to foster a sense of wonder and reverence, a sense of connectedness, a sense of gratefulness, a sense of anticipation and hope, a sense of mercy and justice, a sense of trust, a sense of love and goodness and joy and peace and contentment. To pray is to enter into the very heart and Spirit of God, and to begin to see the world as God sees it. Kayla McClurg puts it this way: prayer is no magic potion, a dab of this and a pinch of that, accomplished in five easy steps. Prayer, Jesus says, is relationship. Prayer is persistence. Prayer is pestering God at midnight. Pester God, she goes on to write. Pester God to forgive. Pester God to give us what we truly need. Pester God to show up in our lives in ways that help us show up too. Get up, go to the source, keep on asking, keep on looking, keep on knocking. This Thursday afternoon, we will have the opportunity as a congregation to put these words into practice as we host a very special and timely afternoon of prayer beginning at 2 o'clock on Thursday. At that hour, the Reverend Steve Heiss, a United Methodist pastor from Binghamton, will be upstairs meeting with our bishop, discussing the letter Steve sent to the bishop, announcing his acts of civil disobedience by performing same-sex weddings that are forbidden in our United Methodist Church. There are many of us who want to see that policy overturned, but for now, it remains the law of our church, unjust and as unloving as it may seem. There are many things we might pray for on Thursday afternoon. that God might remove the stumbling blocks and obstacles that get in the way of an expanded understanding of human relationship and covenant and sexuality. That God might see things our way and move out of the way all those who stand in the way of our way. That God might move the hearts of those in power to change their minds and to vote differently in order that their will might accord with ours. But Jesus counsels us to focus our prayers only on the needs of the moment, not of down the road. Jesus counseled us to focus our prayers on avoiding temptation and evil, on practicing forgiveness, on trusting and honoring God at all times, in all places, in all circumstances. I hope you'll join us on Thursday afternoon to welcome those from across the state who will be here to gather in prayer that afternoon, to provide hospitality and welcome to them, to have our prayers and our love join theirs, and most of all, to have our prayers lead us deeper into the mind and heart and will of God. Now, one of the dangers of having my sermon written out on pieces of paper is sometimes they get buried in other pieces of paper. So I want to read for closing the words of a hymn, an old hymn, that defined prayer this way. Prayer is the soul's sincere desire, unuttered or expressed, the motion of a hidden fire that trembles in the breast. Prayer is the burden of a sigh, the falling of a tear, the upward glancing of an eye when none but God is near. Prayer is the simplest form of speech that infant lips can try. Prayer, the sublimest strains that reach the majesty on high. Prayer is the contrite sinner's voice returning from their way, while angels in their songs rejoice and cry, "Behold, they pray." Prayer is the Christian's vital breath, the Christian's native air, their watchword at the gates of death. They enter heaven with prayer. O thou by whom we come to God, the life, the truth, the way, the path of prayer thyself hast trod, Lord, teach us how to pray. Amen.